Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition, Saturday, December 31st, 2022. Top 10 Stories of 2022, Number 1. December 16th Earthquake Really Rattled Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Earthquakes have become part of life in Midland. For the most part, the experience in Midland has been to feel rather a faint tremor and then check with others on social media to see if they felt it. Every once in a while, there would be a magnitude 4.0 or greater quake, three prior to November 16th around Midland. In the case of a 4.6 magnitude earthquake near Stanton, the earthquake would show up among the strongest in state history. Most around Midland would show some concern, be glad they didn't live west of Mentone in far west Texas, where activity is greater, and not really think too much about it. That changed with two 5.4 magnitude quakers in Mentone and Midland within a month of each other, and specifically in Midland on December 16th, when things got more serious for Midland residents. A constant shake. The earthquake that tied for the third strongest to take place in Texas, according to EarthquakeTrack.com, happened around 5:35 p.m. on December 16th, 14 miles north-northwest of Midland in Martin County. Quakes in Midland before that day were basically instantaneous. This quake wasn't like that. It shook for a longer period of time and included a 3.2 magnitude aftershock. A reminder, this earthquake experience was no fluke. The U.S. Geological Survey reported another three aftershocks followed these two for a total of five. The San Antonio Express News quoted geophysicist Jana Persley at the USGS's National Earthquake Information Center in Colorado that the quake was felt by more than 1,500 people over a large distance from Amarillo and Abilene in Texas to as far west as Carlsbad, New Mexico. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram stated that the quake was felt in the Metroplex. The quake was the exact same magnitude as an earthquake 1 month earlier west of Mentone in far west Texas. It was felt as far as south as San Antonio. The USGS also reported 32 earthquakes followed the 5.4 west-southwest of Mentone in Reeves County. A different response. Earthquakes across the region had the attention of the industry and the Railroad Commission of Texas for some time. Seismic response areas had been created in areas where enough activity has taken place, like west of Mentone and Gardendale. In short, a seismic response area was to address injection-induced seismic activity from disposal wells, according to the RRC. However, one day after each of the strongest quakes, the RRC announced it was sending a team to Mentone and then Midland to investigate. At that time, the Midland and Mentone 5.4 magnitude quakes were the strongest recorded in the continental United States in 2022. In December 2021, the RRC ordered the indefinite suspension of all produced water disposal in deep injection wells in the SRA, the RRC reported on December 17th. Staff will review permit requirements for other injection wells in the area as it prepares for a response to reduce the frequency and intensity of the earthquakes. Even as the Texas Oil and Gas Association had no problems with the investigations that was set to take place. The RRC inspection of injection well sites in the area is appropriate and should inform, along with industry data, the best next steps forward and direct actions beyond currently adopted protocols, said Todd Staples, president of the TXOGA, in a statement that weekend. Reducing injection volumes targeted shut-in of injection wells, expanding the size of the SRA, and comprehensive data collection and analysis are all available tools. Scientific data confirms that some continued seismic activity often occurs after an event like that one that occurred Friday evening. Staples also called for the industry and academia continue to explore alternatives to wastewater injection through market-based water reuse and recycling, as well as innovative pilot programs and collaboration with the Produced Water Consortium led by Texas Tech University. EarthquakeTrack.com on Thursday evening reported Midland had been home to 174 earthquakes in the last 365 days. That total pales in comparison to the 1,815 quakes near Mentone during the same time period. The Mentone area is one of the most active regions in the continental United States, if not the most active. Not even an area in California can match the seismic activity taking place in far west Texas. However, Mentone is not the larger metropolitan area, and after December 16th, the seismic issue had everyone's attention. Here is a sidebar that accompanies the previous story. Top 10 stories of 2022. Number 1, December 16th earthquake really rattled Midland. Number 2, Blong leads women's wave at polls. Number 3, Midland companies fire up upstream acquisitions market. Number 4, Midland Christian and Trinity schools impacted by arrests and legal issues. Number 5, MPD says homicides reach new high in 2022. Number 6, MISD's report card is among the best in two decades. Number 7, MISD Superintendent merry-go-round continues. Number 8, tragedy on West Texas roads, golf team crash outside of Andrews. Number 9, Hogan Park redo hits campaign snag. Number 10, PSP demonstrates what it can do for Midland and the Permian Basin. The most read stories on MRT.com this year by Mercedes Cordero. Midland Reporter-Telegram delivered various breaking news stories that became the most read stories in 2022. Take your pick. Business, crime, and education ranked in the top 10. Here's a look at the most read stories on MRT.com. Number 1. Midlander makes Forbes list of top billionaires. Forbes magazine released its annual list of the richest Americans in September, and Midlander Autry Stevens joined the magazine's list of top 400 billionaires. With an estimated net worth of $10 billion, the 84-year-old Midlander ranked 63rd on the list, just ahead of Walmart heiress Christy Walton. Forbes reported 43 of the top 400 were from Texas. 13 of those were involved in oil or pipelines. Number one on the list is Elon Musk, with a net worth of $251 billion. Number two, Tatum Gwin announces departure from local airwaves. Tatum Gwin announced in July her departure from the Midland-Odessa news broadcast's airwaves. Gwen was raised professionally in the newsrooms of Midland, Odessa from the day she talked her way into an internship at KOSA. There, she saw firsthand Jay Hendricks and Tatum Hubbard raise the stature of the Odessa station. Her career included anchoring the morning show. But after Hubbard made the transition to information and marketing at the University of Texas Permian Basin, she brought Gwen along. She has found her next broadcasting challenge, and that will take place in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Number 3, DPS says 40 missing children located in Midland, Odessa. In June, 40 missing children were located or recovered in the Midland, Odessa area during a three-week operation in West Texas. Operation Lost Souls was conducted by Homeland Security Investigation, DPS, and local agencies. The operation recovered a total of 70 missing children, many of them runaways, ranging in age from 10 to 17, according to an ICE press release. The children recovered included victims of human sex trafficking and victims of physical and sexual abuse. 40 children recovered in the Midland-Odessa area, the youngest reported being 13 years of age, according to DPS. Number four, DPS reports 23-year-old Midlander dies after crashing Mercedes. In March, the Department of Public Safety reported that a 23-year-old Midland man died after crashing his vehicle south of Midland. Jose Ruben Baeza was traveling westbound on County Road 130, just west of County Road 1200, when the Mercedes CLA 250 he was driving veered off the roadway, struck a residential metal fence, and then hit a tree. The accident occurred around 12:07 a.m. and 2 miles south of Midland. Number five, MPD says four Trinity school administrators arrested. Midland Police Department officials arrested four Trinity School of Midland administrators on February 25th for failure to report with intent to conceal neglect or abuse. Todd Freese, Shelby Hammer, Crystal Myers, and Adrian Clifton have been arrested. Numbers 6 and 7. MPD reports Midland Christian administrators and coaches arrested. Affidavit details. On February 16th, the Midland Police Department reported that it arrested three administrators and two coaches at Midland Christian School for failure to report with intent to conceal neglect or abuse. Jail records reported that Jared Owen Lee, Gregory Neil McClendon, Barry Lee Russell, Matthew David Counts, and Dana Elizabeth Ellis were arrested. An affidavit obtained by the Reporter Telegram detailed what led to the arrests. Number 8. What's that going to be at the former Stein Mart? Midlanders were very excited with the news that the former Stein Mart location, next to Market Street, was going to be transformed into a trampoline and amusement park. Urban Air Park had its soft opening in December. Number 9. MISD announces more principal departures and hires. Midland MISD announced in June that two campus principals would not return for the 2022-23 school year. They also announced that Kristen Alber would be named the new principal at Midland Alternative Program, MAP. Christina Rivera was named principal at Alamo Junior High. Emily Roberts was promoted from assistant principal to principal at Emerson Elementary. And Morgan Robertson was named the new principal at General Franks Elementary. Number 10, Graham Pharmacy owner makes statement about sale to Walgreens. In early December, the Reporter Telegram confirmed that the Graham Pharmacy in Central Midland would be closing. Owner Donnell Ashton Slentz confirmed the social media reports that the legendary pharmacy, lunch, place, gifts shop would be closing its doors. Ashton told the Reporter Telegram that she has sold Graham Pharmacy to Walgreens because it has been difficult to manage the changes to an independent pharmacy. Commentary, City to Deal with New Priorities by Lori Blong, Midland Mayor-Elect. Happy New Year, Midland. I hope your Christmas season has been blessed and joyful. Over the weeks since the November election, I have had the privilege of meeting with each city council member individually. My goal has been to hear about their individual priorities for the coming year and long-term goals for their time on the council. You have already and will continue to hear directly from your council members about their individual perspectives. In my conversations with them, I learned the priority lists of all seven of us on the council, while not certainly identical, are remarkably similar. In these recent weeks, I have also met with other key leaders in our community, senior city staff, as well as leaders of other organizations in Midland, to hear their concerns and hopes for Midland as we head into 2023. Midland is faced with significant changes, a circumstance which is no doubt familiar to us in the Tall City. We have the dual concerns of a growing city infrastructure and an aging city infrastructure. We are all experiencing workforce challenges and educational needs within our community. We face transitions of leadership in several key businesses and civic organizations. None of these changes are to be downplayed or underestimated, but I am confident and thankful that our city council and community leaders understand our challenges and are ready to work together to build a better Midland. I have compiled what I've learned from constituents on the campaign trail this fall with all I've heard in these meetings with council members and community leaders. This has given me an opportunity to more fully round out my understanding of Midland and where we are headed as a city. This weekend, at the start of a new year, I want to share some of the priorities and perspectives I have gained. Long-term planning and some immediate action for capital projects and generational water security our city needs. City Council is planning an early council retreat to sit down for an extended period of time to discuss the many capital needs of our community. Each council member represents different perspectives. The collaborative process at our retreat will allow us to discuss these perspectives in depth and develop a game plan for short-term and long-term capital projects. Our discussions and plans will center on prioritizing funding solutions and prudent timelines for capital projects. Some potential priorities could be road extensions and planning for future developments, water security planning, a training facility for police and fire departments, various buildings owned by the city which need to be upgraded or maintained, among others. We cannot and should not do all of these capital projects at once, but the Midland City Council is committed to identifying and addressing the most critical needs immediately and making prudent plans for the future. City Manager Hiring Process. Our current city manager, Robert Patrick, has been such a wonderful and stabilizing leader of our city staff through COVID and the past few years. I'm thankful for his diligence and friendship. Patrick has announced his retirement, effective this spring, and so the council will commence a hiring process for a new city manager. We have some wonderful candidates right here in Midland and may ultimately make that hire locally. It is my firm belief that a full search process for a new senior city manager will give us and the staff confidence that we have hired the best person for the job, whether internally or externally hired. This hiring effort will be a critical component of the Midland City Council's efforts in 2023. Planning an in-depth discussion for police and fire departments. Our Midland Police and Fire Departments are in need of our attention and ongoing support. As a council, I hope that we can make plans to address a joint training facility, some policy and procedural reviews, revisions, recruitment and retention challenges, as well as to address our firemen's pension fund. These are multifaceted and complex issues which will not have an overnight answer. We have leaders on our council who are ready to dig in and work toward the benefit of those who risk their lives to keep our community safe. As you can see, the list of priorities is diverse and complex, and this is not even a complete list of all that must be done. We must also care well for all city staff and work toward greater workforce attraction and retention in all city departments. We must continually move forward in economic development, supporting the business-friendly environment we enjoy. We must address quality of life and recreation needs in our community to attract and retain families here. We must lock arms with the educational and philanthropic community in Midland to address literacy and quality education for all. The best way, dare I say the only way, for Midland to successfully accomplish our priorities is for us to work together. Our 2023 Midland City Council has the capacity and desire to collaborate and to problem solve. I am excited to continue this good work with philanthropic, business, and elected leaders across Midland, as well as with you. As we look forward to a fresh new year, I ask you as Midlanders to actively contribute to this collaborative problem-solving attitude in our community. When you see a problem, join us in seeking out the solution. May we each be a voice in our own circles of influence to give our time and efforts to move forward, to move Midland forward in 2023. Commentary. Midlanders Made an Impact on Me in 2022 by Stuart Doreen. 2022 was the year Midland got back on its feet after the COVID pandemic. We transitioned back to daily life and had some incredible wins for the region. I personally was fond of the academic successes and philanthropy happening in the community. This year, I struggled with a true newsmaker of the year. It was hard to give it to someone who left the area or go negative with Hogan Park, which became the topic du jour during the election season. There was enough negative about 2020 and 2021. So in its place is a look at people who made an impact on me during the year. I do not consider the list to be representative of all of Midland because it isn't. Angela Ramsey. When is the last time a school district plucked Midland ISD's chief executive because of academic performance? Anyone? I don't care what one thinks about Angelica Ramsey. She made an impact with academic performance in Midland, and I will always appreciate her stay, no matter how brief it was, because of that. Stephanie Howard. If Midland ISD's academic report card resembles the one from 2022, then Midland ISD will have the total package when it comes to a superintendent. I can write this because with Howard as superintendent, any bond package put before the voters will pass. I am certain of it. Her supporters wouldn't dare disappoint her or give others an opportunity to criticize. Continuing the academic rebound taking place will put Howard in position to be on the Mount Rushmore of Midland educators. Good luck to her in 2023. Jeff Beard. The disappointing thing about the Hogan Park debate is that it might have stained the great work Jeff Beard has done on behalf of the community. Beard is part of the group that brought Green Acres back to life. He also has been a capable representative on the Midland County Hospital Board. I have had some disagreements with Beard about the Hogan Park projects, not because of costs, but mainly because I just think there are better opportunities out there. But never did I think Beard had ulterior motives or was leading the city down the wrong path. He deserves better than that. Beard brings credibility to the Hogan Project, and those debating whether to donate privately to the Quality of Place Conservancy should tune out the noise and remember that. Rick Davis. He was the best school member that I've ever covered. There wasn't a member who did as much homework or came to the meeting as prepared to discuss education issues as Davis. Unfortunately for those who found themselves in disagreement with Davis, he could find a flaw in their argument, pick it apart, and it was usually game over after that. Davis also puts forth plans that were in the best interest of the district. That got lost in the politics of tax elections, bond issues, or school name changes. And any person who thought Davis did so for personal gain was ill-informed. One other thing that is disappointing about Davis's departure of the board is the disappointment that I will not cover a board with Davis and Brandon Hodges, the two smartest people I know when it comes to educational governance. Brian Murray. While we are giving out kudos to school board members, how about some praise for Brian Murray, the board president? Under Murray's direction, the board has hit a home run with its selection of a superintendent. His reward? Something the board hasn't experienced much of during the last few years, peace in the community. It is such a sweet sound. One other thing, Murray has worked incredibly hard as board president, something that is a requirement for anyone serving in that position. Robin Donnelly. I thought County Commissioner Robin Donnelly was a class act, even during times when we might not agree. He was always agreeable. We don't experience that a whole lot anymore in politics. Too many people are concerned about winning and being able to spike the football for the entire community to see. I certainly have been guilty of that. Donnelly is also a roads guy, and we need road guys in government more than ever. Effectively, getting from point A to point B is the most underrated thing government is responsible for, but we all know how much it matters. I hope the county has someone willing to step up on that front. Diane and Ed Anderson. Which one had a better year? Diane had no problems knocking off an incumbent and winning a term as county commissioner for Precinct 4. Ed led the effort to build a coalition of supporters who helped save the Midland College Aviation Maintenance Program. They were Midland's power couple of 2022. Jason Stockstill. He is the chairman of the board at Midland Christian. If there was an entity that took a fair amount of body blows during 2022, it was Midland Christian School. The school's issues with the law and order system of Midland are well chronicled, and its changes were wholesale. Still, at just about every turn, Stockstill communicated with the Reporter Telegram about every change in every department involving current or former employees. Midland Christian didn't have to, but I appreciate that he did. Here's hoping for less attention on MCS and Trinity in 2023. The Midland Worker. I will write about this more in 2023, but Midland's number one quality of place problem isn't that there is nothing to do, but that there isn't the needed workforce. What is amazing with a possible entertainment complex big box store shopping area being recruited to West Midland is that someone believes that the city can find the workers to operate such venues like they do in other cities. Because Midland's stores and restaurants are working shorthanded as it is, please remember that when spending way too long in a drive-through line or seeing a grocery aisle that needs obvious restocking. I hope that 2023 is the year where more non-oil industry businesses can say they no longer need help wanted signs and Midlanders can get the service they deserve. Stuart Doreen is the editor of the Midland Reporter Telegram. Area Roundup from Staff Reports. DPS says South Texas man dies in collision north of Midland. A 38-year-old man from South Texas died Thursday evening after a two-vehicle collision north of Midland in Martin County, according to the Department of Public Safety. Eddie Garcia Science of Mathis crashed a 2012 Mitsubishi Lancer into the back of a Peterbilt truck with trailer around 21 miles north of Midland. Science was traveling south on State Highway 349 near mile marker 306 when he failed to control his speed and struck the trailer of the Peterbilt truck from the rear, DPS reported. The Peterbilt truck had slowed to make a right turn onto a private drive, according to DPS. The accident happened around 11:14 and Sines was not wearing a seatbelt. Edinburgh man dies in collision south of Midland. A 41-year-old from Edinburgh died Thursday night after colliding with a truck with trailer south of Midland, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS troopers reported that David Vela was driving a 2020 Ford F-350 north on State Highway 158, 4 miles south of Midland, when his vehicle struck a 2000 Kenworth truck with trailer attempting a left turn into a private drive. The Kenworth had been traveling south on State Highway 158. The collision took place around 6:31 p.m. and Vela was not wearing a seatbelt, according to DPS. from the energy and oil page. Drilling rig count gains nearly 200 in 2022 by Mella McEwen. Drilling activity ended 2022 almost 200 rigs higher than when it began, reaching levels not seen since just before the COVID-19 pandemic began in the spring of 2020. Oilfield services firm Baker Hughes said Friday its U.S. rig count, which it has released weekly since the 1940s, was unchanged at 779 this week. Still, it is 193 rigs higher than the 558 counted a year ago. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil dipped by one to 621, 141 more than the 480 at work last December. The number of rigs seeking natural gas inched up by one to 156, 50 more than 106 last year. Texas saw its rig count rise by two to 376, 99 more than the 277 at work across the state in the previous December. New Mexico dipped one rig to 102. Oklahoma, one, joined Texas as a producing state to see an increase, while Louisiana, one, and Utah, one, joined New Mexico as producing states seeing declines. The Permian Basin added one rig for 353 at work across the region, 60 more than the 293 tallied last year. The Ardmore Woodford Basin was the only other major producing basin to see an increase, adding three rigs. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active county in the Permian with 65 rigs, down one for the week. Martin and Reeves counties were second with 35 rigs each, unchanged for Martin, up two for Reeves. Eddy County, New Mexico was close behind with 34 rigs, unchanged for the week. And Midland County was with 32 rigs, up one. Loving County reported 27 rigs for a second week, while Howard County held at 22 rigs for a second week. Ward County had 17 rigs, unchanged, and Upton County reported 15 rigs for a fifth consecutive week. Glasscock County dropped one rig for 11, and Culberson County had 10 rigs for a second week. In Verus Foundations, part of the energy-focused software-as-a-service firm, Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 872 during the week ended December 28th, increasing by one from the previous week. The count is flat in the last month, but up 23% year over year. In the last week, the Permian hit a new 2022 high of 335 after adding two rigs. Appalachia and the Gulf Coast added one rig each, putting totals at 56 and 120. The DJ Basin fell by three rigs to 19, and the Anadarko Basin lost two rigs to land at 82. The Williston Basin was flat at 41 rigs running. Oil prices end tumultuous year near where they began, by Mella McEwen. Crude prices ended 2022 about where they began, but what a roller coaster they rode in between. After starting the year a little shy of $80 a barrel, crude futures ended the year just above $80 a barrel. But during the year, they reached highs not seen since mid-2014, reaching near $123 this summer. Prices were propelled by concerns about crude supplies, in large part because Russia's invasion of Ukraine threatened to remove about 2 million barrels from an already tight market, and in part because of a world coming out of COVID-19 lockdown was craving more and more oil. Prices were also dampened by roiling concerns about a looming global recession, uncertainty around China's oil demand as it went into and back out of COVID-19 lockdowns, and the fact that Russian energy supplies weren't leaving the marketplace in the quantities expected. While uncertainty is expected to keep prices volatile, some analysts believe basic market fundamentals, not quite enough supply to meet demand, will keep prices trading in their current range, if not a bit higher. In a holiday-shortened week, West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange fell 3 of 4 trading days, but that one gain, $1.86 Friday, to end the week at $80.26, was enough to allow prices to eke out a weekly gain. Prices closed last Friday at $79.56 a barrel. The posted price ended the week at $76.74, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices rode their own roller coaster, climbing to highs not seen in 14 years, approaching $10 per MCF. The recipe for those higher prices was storage levels below 5-year averages, with rising demand for natural gas, both domestically and globally, as U.S. allies sought U.S. natural gas to offset Russian supplies stirred in. As the year drew to a close, though, a surge in storage levels and a mild winter, the week before Christmas notwithstanding, undercut price levels. Henry Hub prices on the NYMEX started the holiday shortened trading week jumping 20 cents, but that was followed by a 57-cent tumble that sent prices below $5 per MCF, another 12-cent drop, and an additional 8-cent fall Friday to close the week at $4.475 per MCF. That's down from $5.079 at last Friday's close. Still, producers seem to be more confident in price levels. The Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, in its fourth quarter energy survey, found respondents' expectations have steadily risen since 2019. Respondents to the survey said they expect WTI to end 2023 around $84 a barrel. That compares to the previous year when they expected the price to end 2022 around $74.69, 2021 around $49.77, and in 2020 around $58.54 a barrel. That survey was conducted before the COVID-19 pandemic arrived. There are enough signs to maintain bullish long-term outlook. A lack of investing versus historical periods, a cooperative OPEC Plus willing to limit supply, and a lack of refining capacity. One survey participant commented, "But the demand picture swings on recession uncertainty and China's reopening response." So, although I think the price of oil should creep back up, it is hard not to consider it is just range-bound between $75 and $85 per barrel, which is still very constructive, particularly if cost of goods sold inflation rolls over a bit. In his daily newsletter, Craig Erlem, senior market analyst with Oanda, wrote, "Going into 2023, the risks are arguably tilted to the upside, although that has been the narrative for much of the year, and yet we're on course to end it not far from where we started. While producers have finally caught up with post-pandemic demand, other risks remain next year, notably Russian output amid the new price cap and its threat to cut output and not supply any countries abiding by it. There isn't a problem now, but if prices do start rising, that could accelerate the move quickly." Midland Reporter-Telegram Obituaries, published Saturday, December 31st, 2022. Danetta D. Perkins. Danetta D. Perkins passed 12/29/2022 at home surrounded by family. Visitation will be held 12/31/2022 at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland, Texas, from 3 to 5 p.m. Interment will be held January 1st, 2023 at Miller's View Cemetery in Miller's View, Texas at 1 p.m. Dee was born to Danny Lee and Jackie Arlene Smedley, 12/21/1960, in Cortez, Colorado. D demarried her high school sweetheart, Mark K. Perkins, June 30th, 1978. Dee is survived by her husband, Mark K. Perkins, children, James A. Perkins, and wife, Ashley Borsella, daughter, Rebecca L. Bryant, and husband, Justin Bryant, seven grandchildren, two brothers, Danny and wife, Grace Smedley, Ron and Karen Smedley, many cousins, nieces, nephews, and great-nieces and nephews, plus so many adopted family. Dee was preceded in death by her parents, Danny and Arlene Smedley. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Cystic Fibrosis Foundation or the Wounded Warriors Project. Donald Raymond Craig. Donald Raymond Craig, 92 of Midland, was called home by the Lord on December 18, 2022. He was born in Galveston, Texas, and was predeceased by his beloved wife, Patricia, parents, Raymond and Essie Craig, brothers, John, and sister, Dorothy. Donald and Patricia met and married while they were both serving on Navy active duty at the U.S. Naval Hospital in Corpus Christi, Texas, and were married for 58 years. Survivors include son, Michael, and wife, Nancy Craig of North Carolina, daughter, Margaret, and husband, Randy Kwiatkowski of Massachusetts, daughter, Michelle Booth of Maine, five grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. A celebration of life will be held March 25th, 2023, at Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff. He will be laid to rest with his wife, Patricia, at Arlington National Cemetery in Arlington, Virginia. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials be made to the nonprofit Manor Park Incorporated, 2208 North Loop 250 West, Midland, Texas, 79707, or Christ Church Anglican, 5501 North Midkiff Road, Midland, Texas, 79705. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Donnie R. Leeton, Jr. Donnie R. Leeton, Jr. tragically left this earth on April 5th, 2022, but heaven gained an angel. Donnie born March 7th, 1958, to Helen and Don Leeton, Sr. Donnie preceded in death his parents and grandparents. Survivors include daughter Mandy, son Ricky, and three granddaughters, sister Tangi of Midland, Sally of Colorado, several nieces and nephews. Very special recognition to Home Hospice for going above and beyond in their service. Oma Sue Ritchie. Oma Sue Ritchie, 86 of Midland, went home to be with the Lord on Wednesday, December 28, 2022, in Amarillo, Texas. Graveside services will take place at 1 p.m. on Monday, January 2, 2023, at Elmwood Cemetery in Bowie, Texas. She was born February 14, 1936, in Montague County, Texas, to Rias and Lily Dyer Russell. She was preceded in death by her parents and sister, Marjorie Nell Polk, and her brother-in-law, Billy Wayne Polk. She survived by her husband, Benny Ritchie, daughter, Karen Evans, and husband, Bobby Evans of McLean, Texas. Grandchildren, Hunter Evans of McKinney, Texas, and Mackenzie Evans of Allen, Texas, and one great-grandchild and numerous nieces and nephews. Arrangements entrusted to the White Family Funeral Home of Bowie, Texas. Robert Arnold Bob Spears. Robert Arnold Bob Spears passed peacefully at home, surrounded by family, December 24th, at the age of 80. Bob was born on Cinco de Mayo, 1942, in Nacogdoches, Texas, to R.V. and Doris Spears. At that time, his family lived in Hemphill, Texas. Bob is survived by his devoted wife of 30 years, Susan J. Spears, his daughter, Sarah Elizabeth Spears of Austin, Texas, his son, Reese Spears, and grandson, R.J. Spears of Lafayette, Colorado, his daughter, Emily Spears Nelson, husband, Danny Nelson, and great-granddaughter, Emma Grace Nelson of Frisco, Texas, his sister, Carolyn Johnson of Kerrville, Texas, and Mary Ann Howell of San Antonio, Texas. He is preceded in death by his parents, his first wife, Marilyn Spears, and his brothers-in-law, Bob Johnson and Ralph Howell. A celebration of life memorial service is being planned for Cinco de Mayo. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, the family request that a donation be made to a charity of your choice.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, January 1st, 2023. ECISD Looking to Make Safety Strides, by staff writer. In anticipation of more campus safety mandates from the governor's office, Ector County ISD is already taking steps to make the district safer. The legislature is meeting on January, and there are going to be a lot of lawyers and that and additional things that all school districts are going to have to implement. Executive Director of District Operations, Courtney Smith, said. Exterior doors are already required to be locked, and upgraded fencing is another part. Intruder resistance film could possibly be another piece that we need to add. We're actually working with a contractor currently. They're going around. They started Monday, December 5th, Smith said. He said they're going to every facility in the district, and ECISD is looking at what it would cost to install intruder resistance film at all the front entrances and windows. It's just a film that you put over the windows or glass doors. It's not bullet resistance, but it's intruder resistance. They have a couple of different types of this film. They have a tier one film that takes intruders with a weapon approximately 2 to 2.5 minutes to enter the facility if the door is locked and get through the glass, Smith said. They have a tier two that takes about 6.5 to 7 minutes to get in. We watch videos on it, so we are going to be looking at the tier two. We should be getting a quote on that soon. But again, back to the governor's mandate, if that is something that they are going to require school districts to do, we're going to see if there could be possibly funding from the state provided. We just don't know yet what's going to look like until the legislature makes the decision and it comes from the governor's office and TEA, Texas Education Agency, he added. The tax ratification election approved by voters in 2018 helped pay for secured access to buildings and added fencing. The public's been real receptive, and I think our principals and leadership have been really appreciative of that. We thank the community for allowing us to do that by passing the TRE, Smith said. One of the elementary schools also requested a vestibule be installed with additional doors so that people didn't walk right straight down the hall. Smith said the district has gotten a proposed list of safety requirements for all districts in Texas. The comment period is not open, and the rules are not final on that yet. But we do have a list from which we're starting to work from. There are probably going to be some minor changes to that list, but probably not substantive changes. We're reviewing that list now, and of course that came from TEA. That does include the intruder-resistant film, the 6-foot fencing, he added. The state is saying that the secure on area, you have to have an unscalable 6-foot fence or an 8-foot fence. Districts also require to have all exterior doors locked at all times. We implemented that at the first of the school year. Our offices are going around and conducting weekly intruder audits and checks on those exterior doors. Our locksmiths have been super busy getting those doors operable and in good shape, and they're in good shape across, Smith said. The district, with the help of the custodians and principals and staff members, is ensuring that all doors stay locked throughout the day anytime instruction is going on the campus. That is required, Smith said. Additionally, during the school day, we're asking that all interior doors be closed and locked as well. Our teachers and staff members are doing an excellent job, and principals are doing an excellent job of that, he added. They know that because of the weekly safety audits. The ECISD Board of Trustees recently authorized the ECISD Police Department to hire 3 new officers to help with the audits and more campus coverage. Assistant Chief Jeff Daniels said the 3 officers have been hired and are currently going through the police department's field training program. It frees up existing officers to do the work that they need to do and not tying up all their time with those audits, Smith said. The police department and operations working together have stored up safety at the district's facility, he said. It's super important on all of our minds, but we're on top of it. And I think, like I said, the district, we've done a great job starting the school year, abiding by those TEA mandates and mandates that we put in ourselves, Smith added. The average age of buildings in ECSD is 50 years old, and those doors have been opened and closed hundreds of times in some cases. It's tough to keep those things operable, but our hat's off to our maintenance team, our locksmiths, our facilities team, and our officers for keeping those operable and secure across the district, Smith said. During holiday breaks, Daniel said most officers are off, but some of the answer alarm calls and work assignments that take place during the period. In the event of emergency, Smith said people are instructed to get in touch with him or Facility Director Gary Weatherford. We provide all our staff members with the 24-hour dispatch number there, so we're available for sure, Smith said. All our alarms are working. Those are required to be set at the end of the day and those set over the weekend to notify the proper authorities if someone does break in, he added. Smith said the district has done so much it can in-house, securing all the exterior doors, requiring all the exterior and interior doors to be locked. We've done what we can with the budget that we currently have, he added. The Frost building has big roll-up doors, and they're open because it gets hot in the welding shop. When our officers are doing their audits, they're noticing they're wide open to anybody that wants to walk up, so we have to secure that area with an 8-foot fence just to get around instead of this. Our operations department officers are readily working together, and there are boots on the ground to find anything that looks not compliant, and then they let us know, and our team follows behind them to secure those areas as best we can, Smith said. He added that he'll be glad when the requirements are finalized. We know exactly where we are and we're headed and what we need to do. But again, hats off to our maintenance team, facility team, and our offices for securing this as best they can with the guidance that we've received so far, Smith said. Midland Police investigating human remains, staff writer. On Friday at approximately 11:18 a.m., officers with the Midland Police Department were dispatched to the 1700 block of East Texas in reference to possible human remains found in the area. Officers on the scene confirmed the remains are human. There are no apparent signs of criminal activity, but the remains may have been there for an extended period of time, a news release said. The remains will be taken to the Dallas County Medical Examiner's Office for further processing. The investigation is ongoing to identify the deceased individual, the release said. Quick hits. Holiday closures. The Odessa American Business Office will be closed for the New Year's holiday on January 1st. Customer service will be open from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. December 26th. Trash service. City of Odessa's offices are closed on January 2nd to observe the New Year's holiday. Trash will be picked up on different days next week. Monday, rollout carts serviced on Tuesday. And Tuesday, rollout carts will be serviced on Wednesday. Both Thursday and Friday will have regular service. Residential brown dumpsters will be serviced once next week, and apartments and commercials will be serviced twice. Water in emergency. The University of Texas Permian Basin Water in Emergency Conference is scheduled February 28th to March 2nd. On February 28th, a welcome reception is scheduled at UTPB's College of Engineering building. March 1st is the first day of conference sessions at the Midland County Horseshoe, with a keynote dinner at the Petroleum Club of Midland. March 2nd is day 2 of the conference session at the Horseshoe. XTO Energy is the title sponsor. Diamondback Energy is also a platinum sponsor. Register for the conference at waterenergy.com. Obituaries. Tommy Jean Staten Cochran, Louisville, was born December 12, 1928 in Abilene, Texas, to Velma Ann Off, Daniel Staten, and Thomas Ovis Staten. Her ongoing was on December 27, 2022. She graduated from Hill School of Business in Oklahoma City and married Hugh Cochran when she was 18 years old. They were married for 50 years until his passing in 1997. She spent memorable times on her grandparents' horse ranch near Snyder and developed a long passion for riding. She worked in the law offices of Blayton, Dedrick, McMahon, McKim, and Roy Bell for many years and also taught swimming to special needs children and elderly adults. She was a member of the Daughters of American Revolution and Eastern Star. She lived in Odessa for 60 years and was a member of the Belmont Baptist for 50 years, then First Baptist for a small time before moving to Flower Mound in 2014. Visitation will be held at J.E. Faust & Son Funeral Home in Grapevine, 3 to 6, Monday, January 2nd, and burial service at Mount Olive Cemetery Chapel in Big Spring on January 5th at 1. Fort Worth. Yolanda A. Lopez, 73, our beloved mother, grandmother, and sister, went to be with the Lord on Tuesday, December 27th, with her family by her side. Rosary Tuesday, January 3rd, at 6 to 8 p.m., Mount Olivet Funeral Home, 2301 North Sylvan, Fort Worth, Texas. Funeral service Wednesday, January 4th, 2:30 p.m., Mount Olivet Funeral Home, 2301 North Sylvania, Fort Worth, Texas. Yolanda was born January 9, 1949 in Pecos, Texas, to Hilario and Viola Alvarez. She is preceded in death by her parents and siblings, Sammy and Hilario Alvarez, Jr., survivor's daughter, Vicky Hernandez, and grandchildren, Dominique, Angelo, Ariel, and Jesse Hernandez, great-granddaughter, Lily Hernandez, sister, Corrine Sanders, and Melda Alvarez, nephew Fabian Lamont Montez.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.